The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you live in our WTBR studio this morning. It's Friday, March 22nd, and welcome to the show. Nice brighter morning that we're here and seeing out there today, which is kind of nice, but there is some inclement weather on the way tonight into tomorrow. A lot of rain, a little bit of snow. Might be the last big snow that we see for this year. Who knows? But we'll find out, and we're going to do the weather forecast in just a minute. We do have a good show coming up for you. We are awaiting the arrival of our guest this morning, so we might play a little music while we wait for folks to arrive, and then we'll get on with the show. So first of all, let's go to the weather forecast, see what we have in store for us today.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect from 11 p.m. this evening to 11 a.m. EDT Saturday. Today, sunny this morning, then becoming partly sunny. Highs in the mid-30s. Northwest wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Becoming west 5 to 10 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy. Snow or sleet likely after midnight. Snow and sleet accumulation around an inch. Not as cold with lows in the upper 20s. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 70%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And I was hearing for tomorrow, we were going to be looking at some snow, you know, overnight, and then a good amount of rain during the day, heavy at times, I heard, and then coming back down around to a little bit of snow by the end of it. One of those weird systems that we get in spring. So we're going to be, we'll see how that plays out, but, you know, might be a good idea to tie some stuff down and, you know, do all the stuff you do as the storms approach. All right. Once again, we're waiting for the guests to come in for this morning's program, but we've got lots of good stuff to talk about, and we'll be doing that in just a moment. First, let's play a couple tunes for you, and we'll be right back after this.
Thank you.
How about this one?
No, not that one.
How about this one?
Yes, play that one really loud.
WTBR.
Welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you. And while we have a little time this morning in the show, I thought we'd bring on our experience and engagement coordinator, Matthew Tucker. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Well, Sean, how are you?
How about
that would be helpful. I'm well.
Good. So, hey, while we're here and we got a moment, there's kind of an exciting new program going on at PCTV. It's just sort of gotten a launch in the last couple of months, something called Wednesday Night Productions. And people might not be aware of what's going on with that. Maybe let's talk a little bit about that. What is Wednesday Night Productions?
Absolutely. So a little bit of background, because that at giving tours and doing experience stuff, that seems to be like one of my key lines. Is let's give a little history or a little background, little context. So one of the conversations that was had internally by all of the staff at PCTV was a realization that there has been a transition from you've got two groups of community members who are engaging PCTV's facilities and services and equipment. You've got folks who are coming up with content, the producers, and the folks who are interested in the technical creation of content, the crew and volunteers. And we've had a little bit of a shift over the past couple of years where there is a decrease in producers who are interested in creating content, and an increase in folks who are interested in being involved in the technical aspect. So with this particular challenge in mind, we came up with the concept of, inspired by PCTV's early 90s days, when you would have an evening production and you'd have a crew come and they'd have the production experience, we came up with Wednesday Night Productions, where PCTV is working internally on creating the content. So the current group of shows are all shows that PCTV staff are involved in producing. I'm producing two of them. Giving Voices, which is an informational program where we speak with nonprofit organizations and their members and learn a little bit more about what they're doing in the community to get the word out about what they do, hopefully helping them connect with more people in the community. And WTBR's In the Key Of, which was awesome, just premiered this week.
And that program featured Tony Lee Thomas.
Yes, it did.
Who's very well known to the local music scene and always gives a great performance. He was here in the studio.
Which was fantastic. And that is kind of the musician decides what sort of music and what sort of stuff they want to do. There's a little bit of an unplugged vibe to it, but there's no rule about, you know, you have to go acoustic or anything. It's just we're going to give you a half an hour to give us what makes you as a musician. And then the third program that's in the rotation is The Locker Room, which is a sort of a deep conversations interview program based around PCTV sports, so local student sports and community sports programming. First episode featured that one's produced and hosted by Bob Heck.
Very well-known sports commentator and play caller here at PCTV and WTBR.
That's right.
And so, you know, let's back up a minute. So this is a group of very engaged individuals. We have a super membership base here at PCTV and WTBR. Anyone who listens to the radio station knows that there are, I think, close to 30 regular programs that are on this station. On the TV side, there are people that are regularly producing TV programs, local content programs, right? Things that can't be seen anywhere else except here in Pittsfield, and this is for our local audience. And so bringing those two things together of having this facility and having some great content and bringing it together with a group of people that really want to sort of ply their trade, if you will, you know, learn some things and put that to use and make programs for the local community. That's really what Wednesday Night Productions is all about.
Very much so. And I have to say, so the structure is very club-like, which is unusual for us because a lot of the groups who are involved are your sort of traditional solo volunteers who have come together and formed teams or are very objective-based. Mm-hmm. So they're coming in, helping a specific show, helping a specific program, and they're focused on their little corner of the community television universe. And then because they've got so many other things that they're doing, they disengage beyond that. So Wednesday Night Productions gives an opportunity for folks who may not necessarily fit into those two groups to be able to come in and do regular programming. And what's really neat is that I'm doing a little bit of quick math in my head to make sure I'm not fibbing. Most of the members of Wednesday Night Productions first got involved either through PCTV's training series or through Wednesday Night Productions itself. We do have a small group of sort of diehard volunteers, I would say, who are in there partially to have more opportunities to do production and partially because it's helpful to have some experienced hands when you're bringing in folks who are just learning to be able to help distribute the training process and have provide a little confidence for a crew that is mostly learning as they go.
And, you know, it's interesting, too, that, you know, it provides an example for other folks who might be interested in learning some of these techniques, the television production techniques, and maybe just being around a group of people that are like-minded and like to try out new things and you know, explore some of the things like television production that you may never have thought about doing. This is a great opportunity to do that. And to have, you know, this example of the programming and the content available, you know, there's no shortage of that. It's just a matter of finding a way of exploring that and bringing that to the community. So I think of the three content areas, the Giving Voices program, focusing on nonprofit organizations, certainly as we've talked about on this program before, the area is a very strong area for nonprofit organizations. Why not give those groups a little bit more exposure and a little bit more, you know, attention that they deserve in the community to give them a deeper profile. The locker room, certainly high school sports and local sports here in the area, there's always something to talk about. And we had quite the winter sports season this year where two teams went to the Final Four playoffs for the state, and they were just exciting teams to watch, both Taconic and PHS, boys and girls, all year. So those were great. And of course, there's always other things to talk about, like what's going on at Wakona Park. There's a big story in B1 today in the Eagle about that. So the locker room is one of those outlets where we can discuss that kind of stuff. Because otherwise, you know, where are you going to hear a conversation about that? And then of course the local music scene, which has always been a strength of this area. You know, COVID probably did a number on the local music scene. It's been difficult. It's a difficult return to that. I think we all remember what it was like to be able to go out and, you know, hear a band and or just sit in a coffee shop type environment and listen to some jazz music or something. And there's always, and you know, that's coming back. It's nice to be able to see that profiled on a program like WTBR's In the Key Of. And actually, I believe, didn't we just debut that on Wednesday night?
We did.
So at, this past Wednesday, and that was actually a simulcast of a program, so that could be heard at the same time on WTBR at 8 p.m. as it was on Access Pittsfield at 8 p.m.
Exactly. And that was, for that particular show, that was part of the plan and the magic of that show was... We sort of wanted it to be a little bit more audio forward mm-hmm. than the other two shows because being a WTBR program, we wanted it to be strong in the audio space. So
it's a little more complex of a program to produce technically also, right?
Absolutely.
You think about a talk show like we're having here, you have a couple of microphones and a couple of cameras and you can accomplish that pretty easily. But when you get to music, you're dealing with some different things, right? What was it like that night for the crew to produce that program for the first time?
So I think there was some trepidation because it was unlike any of the other shows that they had done previously. And the preparatory experience for a music show is a lot more extensive than another show. You can imagine a performer, a band comes in, they've got to set up all of their equipment, they've got to make sure it's all connected, right. They've got to make sure all the sound is tested and working correctly. But there's another aspect that people don't necessarily think of when they're watching a program that has music in it, and that's that all of the sounds that you're hearing have been very carefully adjusted and sculpted in yeah. order to sound the way the performer wants. Mm-hmm. So we actually spent about half an hour with the performer. You know, Tony Lee would play half a song and then would come into the control room and would listen to the recording and say, okay, let's tweak these levels here and make these adjustments.
Because mm-hmm. he knows what he wants to sound like.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And would go back in, would do another half of a song, and we'd do that a couple times and make a couple adjustments. And the individual who was doing the audio had not done audio prior to the training session.
Wow.
And it just so happened that he was the one who stepped up to be able to do audio that night.
Great.
And it was, we gave him a little extra training so that he wasn't completely caught off guard.
Yeah.
Because, again, the big difference with a talk show, you can just set your levels and make your adjustments.
Yep.
And everybody is going to sound pretty much the way they're supposed to.
Especially for TV. I mean, for radio, there's a little bit more voice processing that goes on like here. But that's usually set up well ahead of time. And you don't really, like... When I come in to do this in the morning, I don't really have to think about the equalization of the microphones or anything like that. That's been set for me, and as long as I get a good level, you know, I'm good to go here. But capturing the sound of someone's guitar or singing voice or something like that, very, very different than
very different than
conversation.
Yeah. And the particular volunteer did a fantastic job, I'll say. We kind of threw him in the deep end to a degree. We prepared him, but no amount of preparing gets you into the place of actually doing.
Yeah.
Until you've done it a couple times and had that experience. There's nothing quite like that.
Right.
So,
and it's a great learning experience, too,
if
you think about it. How much experience you pull away from something like that. You learn things as you're doing them that you bring them back next time and you say, okay, I understood what it was to produce the last one. Now, you know, maybe we have a band instead of a single performer with a guitar. Maybe we have, a four-piece band, and how do I do that? And you just add those skills on and eventually that you really understand how to produce something really good sounding, good looking.
Well, and speaking of skills, by chance, four of the members of Wednesday Night Productions are high school students.
Wow.
So, which is, I can't tell you how exciting that is. Mm-hmm. because there was a time in community media when, and there's still some mystique that comes with television, but a little bit of the magic has tarnished now that people are capable of carrying, you know, a functional video studio in their pocket. So trying to shift that mindset is a challenge, and it's fantastic to have a group of four young people who are interested in where video came from and how video works and why video works and how to elevate it beyond the, because yes, there's a studio in your pocket, but it's in your pocket.
That's true. And there's something very special about working with other people to create a program like this. So the program is called Wednesday Night Productions.
It is.
It's a group of folks here at PCTV that come together, you might imagine, every Wednesday night to help produce one of three different rotating programs. And so, Matthew Tucker, I want to say thanks for stepping in and about this morning. And for people who are interested in joining the group and learning something new about television production or any of the things we talked about, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, that's an important detail. I just wanted to, before I give my info, redouble the fact that that it's an open group. It's a group that we would love to see more people involved in. Even if you have no production experience at all, if you've had any curiosity, we'd love to have you. To become involved, you want to get in touch with me, Matthew Tucker, here at PCTV at either 413-445-4234, extension 0121, or via email at engagement@pittsfieldtv.org.
There you have it. All right, everybody. Thanks, Matt, for coming in. And hopefully people will give that a call or an email, and we'll continue this great work with the Wednesday Night Productions. All right, folks, we're going to take that top of the hour break like we always do here on the program. And we'll be back with our regular scheduled guest after the break. It's 89.7 WTBR FM. This is Morning Drive, and we'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
Oh, yes! 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from MyCom Federal Credit Union, 101 Fenn Street in Pittsfield, where their mission is to continue to promote the principle of people helping people while providing services that meet the diverse and ever-changing needs of their membership. MyCom Federal Credit Union, online at mycomcu.org. And do you need help heating your home? Berkshire Community Action Council may be able to help. The Fuel Assistance Program is accepting new applications beginning November 1st. This program assists with your primary heating source, including all heating types. Once you're eligible for fuel assistance, you're also eligible for a discount on your electric bill. Go to bcacinc.org for more information.
Pittsfield Community Television has relaunched our website at pittsfieldtv.org with a new design to make it easier to find our live streams with PCTV Select, where you can watch live sports, city meetings, and more. Now it's simple to find our past shows on demand and future TV schedules. You can also quickly find information on how to be a member, our upcoming training sessions, and how to donate to PCTV. Check it out at pittsfieldtv.org.
What would you think if your doctor used the phrase stage 4 when talking about your health? For many illnesses, stage 4 means trouble. When we think about cancer, diabetes, or heart disease, we don't wait years to treat them. So why don't we do the same with individuals who are living with mental illness? It's time to change the conversation. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and the Breen Center would like to call attention to the importance of addressing mental health symptoms. It's okay to not be okay. End the stigma.
Let's have a party with all our friends. Let's have a good time. Don't let it end. We got the people.
Hey, friends. If you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is community. And from Tim's Lawn Care, it's almost time for spring cleanups. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281-4222, and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning, and it is Friday, March 22nd. We're going to get a quick listen to the weather forecast from the National Weather Service, and then we still have a little time left before our guest arrives. We'll get to that in just a moment, but I am hearing that we're going to get a little bit of snow, a shot of snow tonight, and some rain tomorrow during the day and into the evening, and then another shot of snow at the end of that. Should be fun. Here we go. Let's listen to that.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Winter weather advisory in effect from 11 p.m. this evening to 11 a.m. EDT Saturday. Today, sunny this morning, then becoming partly sunny. Highs in the mid-30s. Northwest wind 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour, becoming west 5 to 10 miles per hour this afternoon. Tonight, cloudy. Snow or sleet likely after midnight. Snow and sleet accumulation around 10 inch. Not as cold with lows in the upper 20s. Southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation 70%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
All right, that's it. We're going to get some nasty stuff, but it is March. We're not quite through with the winter just yet, or maybe the winter isn't through with us just yet, even though we did have, I think, kind of an easy, warm winter. Not a lot of snow. I think I heard a statistic this morning that said that we had 30-something fewer inches of snow than we would normally have this year. Very, yep. Very unusual. In the studio right now, we have Rose Wessel. Good morning, Rose. Rose is with Berkshire Environmental Action Team and specifically, I believe, the program director for No Fracked Gas in Mass. Did
you
I get
got that
right?
Correct.
Oh, how about that?
Excellent.
That could happen.
Excellent.
So thanks for coming in and thanks for being here on the show.
Yeah. Sorry for being late.
Oh, it's all right. We'll get it in anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So lots of stuff going on, these days and, let's see. What do we want to start with? One thing that's been in the newspaper recently, and also on the city council's agenda, was the new ordinance on battery storage.
Yep.
Right? And I know you and I and Jane Wynn, the executive director of BEAT, have talked about this in the past about peaker plants, for example, and how the transition to other technologies to help with the grid and things like that. What's the deal with the battery storage now that it's finally sort of the rubber's hitting the road on that?
Yeah, the deal with battery storage is it's an excellent alternative to running fossil fuel peaker plants.
Mm.
It has no emissions. If folks go with the up and coming airflow or iron air batteries, they're much less toxic.
Okay.
They're way safer than lithium. And lithium's getting better. You can get like a phosphate-based lithium that's less polluting and so on. And they're finding better ways to mine it as well and recycle it as well, so they don't have to mine as much because that's where it's dirty. But compared to burning a fossil fuel plant, especially the peakers, they're old. They run on things like kerosene sometimes. The two that shut down here in Berkshire County that we got shut down ran on kerosene.
Wow.
The one we're still working on runs on either gas or oil. So when it runs, a lot of pollution, and this has none of that.
Right.
It can also come on like that, instantaneously.
Which is what you need with a plant like that, right?
You need
that. That's for demand that wasn't expected.
Yeah.
That suddenly, or maybe it was expected, but you didn't know exactly how much you were going to need at that moment.
Yeah, it's usually expected about a day ahead, like, we're going to max out all of our baseload power plants. And that's when they need extra power.
And those are the days usually what when we have a heat wave,
yep.
we have, and people kick on their air conditioners, and
yep.
it's going to peak, you know, probably in the middle of the afternoon, something like that. Is that typical?
It tends to be later in the evening.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's because of all the solar on the grid.
Ah.
So solar keeps producing right up until 4 or 5 o'clock.
Mm.
And then as that starts to drop and people come home and turn on the air conditioners, that's when peak tends to hit now.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be middle of the day.
Yeah.
But solar took care of that.
And that kind of storage where you're storing something for later and then using it when needed is not a new concept, right?
Not at all.
I think of like the hydro plant like Bear Swamp or something like that, where what they've done over the years is they've pumped water up to the top of the mountain and then it comes back through and provides hydro when needed, right? That was the concept behind something like that.
Yep.
And that's a kind of a battery storage in a way.
It is very much a battery storage. It's just the battery is the water.
Yeah.
And it's okay, but it's disruptive to habitats.
Mm.
So if it can be done in a closed loop, it's an excellent idea because that's completely non-toxic, you know,
right.
way to do it. Battery storage is great also because it provides services to the grid. So it can regulate the voltage on the grid.
Mm-hmm.
It can regulate the amperage on the grid.
Mm.
So it can provide what they call ancillary services on top of supplying power. So it's
and that would help prevent things like brownouts. And
yep.
that's really what we're talking about there, right? When the voltage dips,
yep.
especially during those heavy use times, people wonder why the lights dim down a little bit. And you're like, that's a brownout.
Yep. And that's usually something to do with regulating the amount of power. And they're great at supplying that.
Huh.
The downside is they can catch fire.
Okay.
It's more rare than a lot of folks you know, think. It's a lot more rare than, for instance, e-bikes, which are in the news catching fire, or people's vape pens and stuff. I saw a video of a guy who had one in his pocket that caught fire. Very unfortunate situation.
Right.
So,
well, certainly, and we hear about a lot of disruptions on airplanes and things like that, right? And that's why you're not supposed to put the lithium-ion batteries in the hold. You're supposed to bring those with you as a check-on baggage, right?
Yep.
You want to make sure that you could get to them and deal with it if you needed to. So I assume that's why it kind of came to the city council as something they had to deal with as an ordinance. And there was some talk about those lithium ion batteries. And I know that Jane Wynn did come to the podium and talked about that. I don't know if it was at the city council or it was at the committee. It might have been at the committee meeting.
I think it was city council.
But one way or the other, there was some concern about that. And it wasn't really laid out, you know, completely, but that's the concern, is that they could have an explosion or catching fire.
Yeah, they're not. Well, the fires tend to be explosive, but it's not explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And when they do go, one of those, they come in what looks like tractor trailer containers.
Okay.
And if one of those catches fire, the range of that fire is about the same as a car fire.
Mm.
So if they're designed well, there's a lot of space between those containers.
Mm-hmm.
And all the folks that we're talking to for developing, we keep saying, make sure they're far enough apart that if one goes, it doesn't take the entire thing. And make sure there's enough buffer around it that even if a section goes, it's not going to affect any of the infrastructure out there.
Yeah.
And there are some plumes that can come out if something catches fire.
Mm.
And depending how many containers that is, that depends on how many people it affects.
Yeah.
So there are hazards to it. And another thing, we talked with Jacinta Williams, you know, the city planner, about the ordinance. And what was happening was they're getting a lot of requests from developers to put in huge, huge battery installations.
Interesting.
And when it gets to that, you want to make sure there are protections.
Yeah.
And I totally understand why they're doing this. We actually ran into that. I live in Cummington, and you think, what's going on in Cummington? But when the grow operations came around, you can build up to 100,000 square foot building, and we didn't have anything on the books for zoning that. So it could have been anywhere. It could have been in the middle of downtown. And it's good to have something on the books in case you get a proposal that's over the top. It's right next to a school. It's in somebody's neighborhood. You can say, no, you can't build something like that here. So that's mostly what that protection was about.
And it's like any new technology, I assume, that, you know, it's hard for sometimes the rules and regulations to catch up with the technology.
Yeah.
The technology usually comes first.
Yep.
And then everyone scrambles around to try and figure out how to deal with it.
Yep.
But certainly this is something. Now, why do you think now that suddenly there's the big push for, is it because the technology has come to a point where it's commercially more viable or needed, or maybe that there are certain regulations that are pushing some of the cleaner technology and some of the peaker plants out? Is that why it's coming together at this moment?
Yes. All of the above. Okay. It's a matter of renewable is becoming much more affordable than building fossil fuel. Mm-hmm. And the only problem with renewable is you only can generate at certain times. So when I'm going to, you know, say the fossil fuel caveat that what you need to gather while the sun's shining or the wind is blowing. Mm. And storage is the other piece of that puzzle. That's that third leg that makes the whole thing stable. So that's happening. Storage is also developing. Like I said, there's iron air batteries, iron flow batteries that are making it less toxic. It's less expensive, too, because it's more common elements that are going into it. And there's a lot of legislation saying we have to decarbonize. So the entire electric grid is supposed to decarbonize. So if that's happening, we need to make sure storage is a part of that.
So it sounds like the lithium-ion batteries are kind of a bridge technology, right? They're very popular right now, but it does require, like I said, a lot of mining.
Yeah.
And so that's environmentally difficult also, right? So there's always this tug and pull, I guess, of what we do to make things cleaner and greener.
There's also the matter of duration. It's a short duration storage. I think 8 hours is kind of the limit on lithium, where iron air batteries. There's a Massachusetts company called Form Energy that makes one that lasts 10 days. So that way, if you have a blackout in the winter, if there's a grid blackout in the winter, there's that much storage available.
So is that technology just a little bit more expensive right now, and that's why it's not being implemented as much?
It's just becoming commercial. It's out of the research stage, it's out of the pilot stage, and they're just starting to build their factory now. So there are a couple of pilot installations that performed better than they expected, and now it's time for the rubber to hit the road. Unfortunately, their factory is in West Virginia. We were hoping it would bring, you know, jobs, manufacturing jobs to Massachusetts, but their plan was to replace coal mining jobs.
Right.
Totally understandable.
And also politically viable, right? Because it's difficult to take away an economic driver for an area without having something that you could fall back on. And I think Pittsfield can understand exactly how that feels, right?
Yeah.
When you lose a major employer like a GE that kept the region, you know, humming for many, many years, and suddenly it's like, okay, what are we now? What do we do now? That makes perfect sense for West Virginia.
Yeah.
And it's also good to see it be an American company and something that we can, you know, rely on for jobs in the economy as well. So that's the one, you know, thing that we hear a lot about green technology and how, well, you know, you need to keep fossil fuels going, but it's like, well, you also need to invest in the future technology because that is also an economic driver.
Yeah.
You know?
So,
Rose Wessel is our guest here this morning. She is the program director for No Fracked Gas in Mass and member of the Berkshire Environmental Action Team, or BEAT. And let's talk about air quality, because there are some very important things going on with that. How's our air quality in the Berkshires?
Actually, right now, it's pretty good. More often than not, we're coming up green on the sensors. We started a program. EPA put out a grant through the Inflation Reduction Act for air quality monitoring by communities.
Okay.
So BEAT applied, and yes, we got it.
Great.
And the program is up and humming. We have, I think, 8 out of the 10 sensors up, if not more by now. You can go to breatheeasyberkshires.org. And right on the homepage, you can see the map of where the stationary monitors are.
Okay.
And there's one at Morningside School, for instance. Mm-hmm. There's one at the fire department. You can click on the dot for that and see what the air quality is at that station at any given time. You can also, there's a little tag on the bottom of that window that comes up that says show in plot, and you can see what it's been for a day, a week, or a month. There's even a year, but they haven't been up for a year. If you go and check that right now, you'll see some much higher numbers at the beginning of it, and that's because they had to be calibrated in Springfield. And there's a lot more pollution in Springfield than there is in Pittsfield.
So where are the hot spots then? Are we just starting to learn that from this project and this data to know where the air is best in the, and some places where the air isn't all that great here in Pittsfield. Yep. And is it just Pittsfield? Is it Berkshire County?
It's just Pittsfield. Just Pittsfield. Berkshire Regional Planning Commission is doing the rest of Berkshire County, and they're incorporating indoor air quality as well.
Okay.
So we're working in tandem with them. We're sharing information, and we're also interested in doing a health survey to see if symptoms that people report coincide with bad air days, to see if there's any kind of hint of a correlation there.
Yeah.
But it's stationary monitors that we have up around the city, but there's also mobile monitors with teams walking around. Folks might see them out there, and they've got these things that almost look like a tennis shoe in their hand. They're these white monitors that they walk around with, and they're looking for hot spots at different times, different places, special locations. So it tends to be near big industry.
Mm-hmm.
It tends to be where there's a lot of traffic.
Okay.
And we're finding out where else it could be. It might be near restaurants that have a grill that doesn't have a scrubber on it, or you know, it could be lots of places.
Interesting.
One of the places of interest doesn't run very often, but it's one of those peaker plants.
Yeah.
We have Pittsfield Generating right smack in the middle of town, less than 900 feet from Allendale School.
Mm.
And when it runs, it puts out a lot. So it's interesting to see what kind of readings we get
and having
when it
the
does
stacks,
run.
Having the stacks as high as they are, does that help?
Or is it? Yeah, those really tall stacks are the steam outlet. The smaller stacks behind it is the actual gas turbine stacks.
Okay.
So they're not as high as those super tall ones. And it helps, but all it does is prolong where it falls out. And
it's going to land somewhere, right?
Yeah, it's got to land somewhere, and it's probably somewhere downwind.
Yeah.
So,
and I guess that would be the next question, too, is, you know, maybe you'll find this out with this data, but when we have bad air quality days, and certainly in the last couple of years, we've all experienced some of those really weird days where it just gets cloudy and hazy, and we realize it's from fires maybe up in Canada or out in the west.
Or down south.
Or even down south coming in to affect our air. So there are a lot of things that we can't even control that it's coming to us, right?
Yep.
So is this project going to help monitor some of that as well?
Yeah, that should show up on the sample. And we already have advice for folks on those days. There's an app that the EPA has out called airnow.gov. You can put it on your phone or you can check it online, and that will tell you the air quality, at least for the region. It's not as granular as the study we're doing, but it'll tell you the air quality at that time. And they have an extra tab that is a smoke map, and you can see where the fires are and the smoke plume that cover the whole continent. Mm. So you can tell where it's coming from at that point.
Yep. So if you thought that you know, things that happen outside of our area don't affect us, you would be wrong.
It's all one atmosphere.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that's happening more and more, so we're experiencing it more and more. I remember seeing it for the first time. Actually, it was driving through Tennessee in 1995. We woke up and the sky was just this god-awful color yellow.
Mm.
And it was from all the coal plants, and there was a temperature inversion. And that's when cold air holds down all the airflow. So nothing goes up, and it was all at ground level. And then first time I saw it come up here was sometime in the 90s, and that was a rare, later 90s. That was rare.
Hmm.
And now every summer or so, we have it once or twice or more that this is happening.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, we think about that. We've got the summer coming up, and even though we got through a winter, it really wasn't that bad of a winter to deal with from Berkshire standards. But you almost think about, well, what's that mean for the summer? Does that mean we're going to have a hot summer? Are we going to have another, you know, a couple of summers like we've had? So,
yeah.
Rose Wessel is our guest here from Berkshire Environmental Action Team. She's the program director of No Fracked Gas in Mass. And in the couple of minutes we got left here in the program, let's talk about river, the rest of river, and also what's going on maybe upstream of that, which is the Bel Air Dam being removed, right? A couple of things going on with the Housatonic River.
I'm not very up on that stuff.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
okay.
Without Jane here, I'm a little bit hamstrung, and I don't want to say the wrong information. It's really secondhand for me.
Yeah.
So if folks want to find out more, they can go to thebeatnews.org or email team at thebeatnews.org, and that's B-E-A-T, not B-E-E-T.
Now, B-E-A-T.
For Berkshire Environmental Action Team. Yep.
Right. And, you know, there are those things, and certainly people have been following them. Again, sometimes those issues don't come to front of mind until they actually start. And I think about, you know, the road project that's going on in front of BMC, and it's sort of concept for a long time. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, now I'm, you know, diverted my track. I have to go somewhere else. So it only hits you when you finally start dealing with it.
Yeah, hopefully we can get Jane on soon. She can talk about it in detail.
Absolutely.
One of the other things that we do have going on is Enbridge is proposing a new gas transmission line. Hmm. If folks remember the NED fight from, you know, 10 years ago.
Was it that long ago already?
It's that long ago already. And this is an existing large gas transmission line, but they're looking to expand it.
Hmm.
And we're trying to get the governor to say no to the state permits for this thing. We don't need more gas right now.
So what's involved in expanding an existing gas line?
You can replace the existing pipe with a much larger pipe.
Okay.
Or if there's room, you can lay a whole other pipeline next to the existing pipeline. That's called looping. That's what they did at the Connecticut expansion down in Sandusfield, Mass. Is they just put a whole other pipeline next to the existing ones. And they're looking to do either one, depending on which segment has space for that. They're also looking to increase the production of the compressor stations. And that's what they did at Agawam with the Connecticut expansion. They expanded the capacity on that, so it produces that much more emissions, and they can push that much more gas through the system.
And where is the gas coming from, and where is it headed?
It's coming from the Pennsylvania shale deposit. So that's Utica, and I'll be darned if I can remember the name of the big one.
That's the area.
Marcellus, the Marcellus shale deposit. And it's going to, that's one of the big questions. Pushing more gas through the system, of course, makes more available to go up to export. Any excess can go up to Canada for export. It's also the folks that they were aiming for in their ask for bids was a lot of local distribution gas companies. So they're working on the assumption that there'll be more demand for gas, even as demand for gas is dropping. I think it's a last gasp kind of effort to get as much market as they can.
But of course, there are other things going on in the world also. And I think of the geopolitical landscape, right, with what's going on with Ukraine and Russia and how Europe was, you know, desperate in need of gas. And I know that the U.S. has been exporting a lot of that gas to replace what Russia had been had selling them, you know, Germany especially. So that there's always those things get thrown in there, right, that affect, you don't think it affects us, but this is the way it does.
And there's almost the inverse of that, too, where we imported a fair amount of gas. That's because of the Jones Act. It's, I think, an 1800s law that we can't ship stuff port to port in the U.S. So we can't get LNG from Texas, for instance, where there's a lot of ports. We can't get it to come in when we need more gas up here in New England. So it has
to
come
from...
seems
like an odd law,
doesn't it? It is. It's a real troublesome law. And it's part of the reason why we also import LNG from time to time. And that's getting harder because one of the other main sources in the world is from Russia. So we're hamstrung on that front, too.
Yeah.
All the more reason to build out renewables and electrify everything. That's true energy independence.
Yeah. I was also seeing something about expansion of offshore wind. I think that was off of either the Long Island shore or Cape Cod. That, again, provides some more energy to the grid, right? You can power thousands of homes with the expansion of that. But that also comes with an environmental cost as well, right?
Not as much as a fossil fuel project by any means. And one of the biggest problems right now is towns arguing over who gets to have the cables coming in, who wants to house that, you know, and the storage that comes with that. They're looking at putting up a lot of storage. There's actually Jupiter Energy has a big battery proposal right now in, it's not Chelsea, but it's right next to Chelsea. Near the airport, basically. And it's the perfect place for a battery storage thing. It's already industrial sites. There's already a lot of infrastructure there. The nearest homes are fairly far away, not as far away as you would like. But but pretty far away. They're not right next to it. And they're putting up a huge battery storage there because of the wind energy that's slated to come in.
Wow. Well, the conversation definitely be continued. We have lots more to talk about, and we will get to that again the next time we have you on. So Rose Wessel from Berkshire Environmental Action Team, thank you so much for being here this morning and talking to us about these very important issues.
Yeah, thanks for taking me for when I could be here.
You betcha. All right. We'll have you back.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Have a good weekend, everybody. We will talk to you again next week. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM.